The book of Job cultivates admiration for Job, but Job questions divine justice. Is the book of Job trying to cultivate an admiration of the person that challenges God? What happens when there's a clash between major biblical theology and a major biblical hero? What happens? Well, that's what happens in the book of Job. Satan's a cynic. Satan doesn't believe that Job is truly good. Satan believes that the goodness of Job is not a reflection of the power of his character, but the quality of his circumstances. Job that quotes God, that's backed by God, is the greatest criticizer of God. How is it that the criticizer of God is supported by God? What is this book doing in the Bible? The book of Job has three parts to it. Part one, as I said, part one is a dialogue between God and Satan. Very bizarre. We'll be diving into that today. Part two is a dialogue between Job and his three friends. Then towards the end, another friend jumps in. Elihu. That's part two, which is the largest chunk of the book of Job. And then part three, part two is 36 chapters. Part three is four chapters, from 38 to 42. It's a conversation between God and Job. So it's three parts, three conversations. God, Satan, Job and his friends, God and Job. Today, we're going to cover conversation number one, and we're going to taste from conversation number three. That's a project of today, and we will probably notice that there is an interesting, surprising, actually amazing relationship between the conversation between God and Satan in the beginning of the book, and then the conversation between God and Job at the end of the book. So before we start reading, and today we're going to start reading, one comment. Who was Job? Where did he live? And when did he live? So in the Talmud, in Masechet Baba Batra, in Tractat Baba Batra, there are many positions here. One rabbi says that Job was from the time of Abraham. Another scholar says, in Baba Batra, in the Talmud, he's from the time of Yitzchak, of Isaac. There is another position that he's from the time of Yaakov. Another position, he's from the time of Yosef. Another position, he's from the age of Moshe. Another position, that he's from the time of the spies, when the Hebrews were in the desert. Another position, Iyov mi'oleha golahaya. He was one of the peace people with Ezra and Nehemiah that moved to Israel from Babylon in the very, very beginning of the Second Temple. There is another position that he's way, way later. He was a scholar in a Beit Midrash in Tiberias. The Talmud locates Job in every age, every generation. He was throughout all generations. And it's weird, and then there's one position in the Talmud which is most surprising. It says that Job never existed. Iyov lo haya velo nivra. Mashal haya. Job was never created. He never happened. It never occurred. He never existed. It's a fairy tale. It never happened. This is a position in the Talmud. Mashal haya. It's a parable. Or maybe we should think about it. It's a metaphor. Now, Rambam, in The Guide for the Perplexed, chapter 22. So he chooses from all the positions in the Talmud, he chooses that one. He says, that's the truth about Job. It never happened. But you see, according to Maimonides, when you say a story didn't happen, but it's a metaphor, according to Maimonides, you're not saying it's not a true story. You're saying It's a true story. Because you see, according to Maimonides, by saying a description of an event is not an historical description, it's a metaphor. It resembles something else, a higher truth. You're not making it less true, you are making it more true. This has everything to do with Maimonides' philosophy of history. I actually wrote my PhD about Maimonides' philosophy of history. I want to take one to make this point very as clear as I can, because this will be very important for today's session. When Maimonides says that the book of Job never happened, and he quotes the Bible, he says it didn't happen, but it's a true story because the message is true. What's more true? What makes something more true? That you describe something because it happens, or you tell a story because it carries a very deep truth, and you describe it that truth metaphorically. Well, Rambam says, well, if it's just a fact about history, that's not very interesting, because that's a story about him, about Iyov, about Job. But if it's a metaphor, it's a story about us. If it's history, it's about something that happened. If it's a metaphor, if it's a symbol of human experience and human existence and the human condition, it's not a story about something that happened. It's a story about something that all the time happens. It's my position. This is how Rambam understood the story of Adam and Eve. It never happened, but it's a true story. It's not about them. It's a metaphor. It's a symbol. It's about us. It's not something that happened. It's something that always happens. And this position of the Talmud and Maimonides is going to be the position that's going to guide our read. The story of Job never happened, but it always happens. It's not a true story, but it carries a very deep truth about human condition. And then Maimonides, in a very powerful move, he says, and maybe that's the position of the entire Talmud in Baba Batra. Because when you say Job was in Abraham's time, no Isaac's time, no Moses' time, no Joseph's time, when you say he was in every time, that's what he's trying to say. It's not a specific event, it's a universal event. And as we know, the story of Job is a story of our lives. The story of suffering. The story of suffering for no reason. The story of suffering, and the suffering is an enigma. That's not his story. Sadly, tragically, it's our story. And with that Maimonidean guidance, I want to start reading chapter 1 in the book of Job. So, like last week, I'll be reading in Hebrew. And I invite you to break your teeth and stay with me in Hebrew. I'll translate as well as I can, but if you feel uncomfortable, so it's okay if you follow me in English, in the translation. Ish haya be'eretz utz, Iyov shmo, v'haya ha'ish ahu tam v'yashar v'yeire Elohim v'sar mira. There was a man in the land of Utz, of Uz, of Oz. V'haya ha'ish ahu tam, tam means, this is very misleading. In modern Hebrew, the word tam means naive. But biblically, tam, tamim, means whole, perfect. Setamim, like a lamb which is whole, which is perfect, which is not bruised, is the only lamb you could offer in the altar. It's not a naive lamb, it's a whole lamb. Setamim. So ishtam, he is whole, he is perfect. The yashar, he is straight. V'yare Elohim, he is God-fearing. And by the way, in the Bible, God-fearing almost always means ethical, moral. Abraham says, Rak en yir'at Elohim b'makom hazeh. Yes, he's afraid that the people of Gerar are immoral, and he describes their lack of morality of not being God-fearing. So yir'at Elohim is being moral. V'sar mera. And he stays away from evil, from the bad way. Tam, yashar, yare Elohim, sar mera. Those are the four descriptions of Job. In other words, Job is perfect. Job never sinned. Job is whole. Job, sar mera. He never did anything bad. Job is perfect. Now, which other biblical figure do we have that we know that was perfect, that never sinned. Never. There's many biblical figures, many biblical descriptions of biblical heroes. Who else did the Bible say, that later on God will say about them, that they are perfect, that they've never sinned? This is a trick question. The Bible is filled with heroes and they've all sinned. Moshe sinned, and because he sinned, he never entered Eretz Yisrael. David HaMelech sinned with Bathsheba. Shlomo sinned, 1,000 wives that seduced him to worship, to build temples for different idols. Everyone sinned. Sarah Imenu, Rashi says, Chata Imenu Be'inui Zeh. She also, everybody sinned. By the way, I think this is the power of the Bible. It shows us heroes that sin, but it cultivates admiration for those people. In other words, biblical heroes are not perfect. And the Bible cultivates admiration for those heroes. This is my way of saying the Bible cultivates admiration for imperfection. Only God is perfect. And graduates of the Tanakh, of the Bible, learn to admire imperfection. It's an important theological move. It's an important psychological move. And then the book of Job comes and it shows a perfect hero, the only one in the entire Tanakh. That's Sar Mira. That didn't do anyone wrong. Anything wrong is Job. Okay? So this is who he is. I'm continuing. Vayvaldulo shiv'a banim v'shalosh banot. He had 7 boys and 3 girls. Vayimikveu shiv'at alfei tzon u'shloshet alafim gmalim. Everything he owned was round. It's added up to a round number. Again, this is the attempt of the text to radiate perfection. Everything is perfect. He was wealthy and he was great more than anyone else. This is the opening of Job. It describes a perfect person with a perfect life. He's a good person and he has a great life. There's a symmetry between his biography and his destiny, between what he does and what he has. Great. That's how it's supposed to be, right? And then it says, "V'halchu v'na v'asu mishteh bet ish yomo." His children had a tendency every day to do a feast. There's another interpretation of Edward Greenstein that Beit Ish Yomo, on their birthday, every birthday they used to do a feast, a party, a birthday party. And they would invite their sisters, all the 10 siblings, 7 boys, 3 girls, they used to celebrate each other's birthdays together. When they finished the rounds of the parties, of the feasts, וישלח איוב ויקדישם וישכים בבוקר ואלה עולות מספר כולם כי אמר איוב אולי חטאו בניי וברכו אלוהים בלבבם ככה יעשה איוב כל הימים. He used to offer sacrifice to God, and his sacrifice was for them, to protect them. Just in case they sinned, and their sin is they said something, they cursed God in their mouth or in their heart. Okay, so he's a tzaddik. His kids do parties, he prays for them, he's a tzaddik, he has a perfect life, and he's a perfect person. That's the opening statements of the book of Job. Vayihi hayom, verse 6, Vayavo bnei Elohim liyatsev al Adonai, Vayavo gam ha-satan betocham. So the sons of God, the divine council, gets together, and Satan is one of them. Who is Satan? Professor Israel Knorr from Hebrew U said once that maybe Satan we used to be called Shatan. Why? Here's why. Vayomer Adonai la Satan, me'ayin tavo? God says to Satan, where do you come from? Where are you coming from? Vayar Satan et Adonai vayomer mishut ba'aretz umitalech ba'am, wandering the world. Mishut, he's meshotet. To wander in Hebrew is meshotet. Maybe that's why he's called Shatan, the wanderer. Satan. And then turned into Satan. That's an interesting theory. Doesn't really matter for me. Have you noticed Job? Did you see Job? Ki en kamohu ba'aretz. There is no one like him. Ishtam v'yashar v'yare Elohim v'sar mera. God says to Job, have you noticed, to Satan, have you noticed Job? He's the best. He's perfect. He stays away from evil. He's straight. Why does God say that to Satan? Why does God say to Satan, have you noticed Job? And I have a simple answer. Very, very simple. God is proud of Job. God created Job, and many times creators are proud of their creation. People who write books are proud of their books. Carpenters are proud of their chairs and tables, and sometimes they show off. God says to Satan, have you seen Job? Subtext, I finally got one right. You know, we all know he created Adam and he sinned. Everything he created rebelled against him. Job didn't. I finally got one right. Finally, the creator can be really proud of his creation. Satan doesn't buy it. This is what Satan says. Vayomer, Vaya'an ha-Satan, Ya'an, Satan answers, Et Adonai, Vayomer, Hachinam yare Iyov Elohim. Do you think that Job is God-fearing and so righteous and such a tzaddik for no reason? And remember the word chinam, it's important for me in this move I'm going to show today. Hachinam yare Elohim, for no reason, chinam. Oh, there is good. It's not because the goodness of his heart and the greatness of his character that he is such a good person. It's for a different reason, says Satan. Halo atasachta be'ado uve'ad beito ve'ad kol asher lo misaviv ma'aseh yadeo birachta mikneo paratz ba'aretz. He's saying, because he has it so good, because he has everything, that's why he's good. Satan's a cynic. Satan doesn't believe that Job is truly good. Satan believes that the goodness of Job is not a reflection of the power of his character, but the quality of his circumstances. There are no good people, according to Satan. There are only good circumstances. You change the circumstances, you make things bad, and people's true character will reveal itself. This is very interesting. The disagreement between God and Satan. And this disagreement opens the book of Iyov. God believes in Iyov. Satan's a cynic. He doesn't believe in Iyov. Throughout history, by the way, the position of Satan is going to become very dominant. In the 1950s, in America, after World War II, when people try to understand human nature and how could World War II happen, there's many experiments like the Stanford prisoners' famous experiment and Milgram's experiment. And their assumption is that if you take good people and put them in awkward, different circumstances, they'll become bad. All those experiments, all those scholars are the representatives of the position of Satan, the cynic, that doesn't believe that human beings can be spontaneously good. Our character is designed only by our circumstances. We don't have spontaneous good nature. God believes in man and in woman and in humanity. Satan doesn't believe in humanity. And that is the opening disagreement of the book of Job. Now, isn't this interesting? That the book of Job, as we all know already from our last session, is going to raise a question, the question of theodicy, the question of good people suffering. And that question will cause many people throughout history not to believe in God. The book of Job is going to raise the question that will cause people not to believe in God. But the book of Job opens with a God that believes in people, believes in humanity. So maybe the resolve of the book of Job is that you won't believe in God. But the God of Job believes in you, believes in us, believes in humanity. That's the opening statement of Job. God believes in Job. God believes in humanity. Satan is a cynic. Satan doesn't. How can they settle? How can they know who's right and who's wrong? So as you know, There's only one way to know if Job's goodness is a result of his good, great surroundings and circumstances. Let's destroy his surrounding. Let's rob him from those great circumstances and then see if he's still so righteous, if he's still a good person. So that's what they do. It's a bet to know who's right. It's a weird bet. God and Satan, this is literally a bet. It doesn't say, by the way, what was the bet like? Did they bet on beer, on coke? But there was a bet. Israeli say, "Mitarvim al tzedek." It's a bet on justice, just to see who's right. So they shake hands, I guess, God and Satan. And then something horrible happens. Job's life is destroyed. Everything he owns is taken away from him. His 7 boys, his 3 girls, are having a birthday party, and the walls of the house collapse on them, and they all die, and Job gets this horrible news. And the same day, od ze medaber veze ba, that he gets the news that everything he owns is destroyed, he gets the news that all his kids have died. How does he react? He still fears God. He still stays away from evil. God won the bet. Satan owes God beer or whatever it is that the bet was about. God was right. Satan was wrong. So how? That's great. The book of Job opens with a question. Can a human being be pure? And now we have an answer. Yes, that human was pure, but there is a problem. Why did God agree? Why that God that loved Job, that was proud of Job, was willing to destroy Job, to destroy his life, to inflict so much misery on Job? And sadly, that's a question that we have an answer to that question. Because God answered that question. In chapter 2, God meets Job. I mean, God meets Satan. He'll meet Job at the end of the book. He meets Satan. And he says to him, in chapter 2, verse 3, "Vayomer Adonai la Satan, asabta libcha avdi Yov, have you noticed Job? Ein kamohu ba'aretz, ishtam v'yashar v'yare Elohim v'sar mera, ve'odenu machzik betumato." Odenu machzik betumato. After everything he went through, he is still holding on to his wholeness. He is still tam, tumato. I won the bet. And then he said to Satan, "Vatasiteni bo levolo chinam." Let me say that again. "Vatasiteni bo levolo chinam." Every word here is loaded. I think "tasiteni" in English is you enticed me. You, Satan, seduced me to destroy his life. Chinam. For nothing. So this is a very loaded line. I want to understand what's going on here. And because I'm a little bit afraid to say what this means, I'm going to hide behind a Talmudic giant, Rabbi Yochanan, one of the greatest scholars in the Talmud, says the following. "Ilmalei hadavar katuv, I efshar leomro, ke adam shemesitin oto venisat." Rabbi Yochanan, literally one of the greatest scholars in the Jerusalemite Bible, and he's a hero of the Babylonian Bible. He says, if it wasn't said in the book of Yov, we wouldn't have had the courage to say it. That God is ke adam shemesitin oto venisat. He behaves like a person that is seduced to sin, and he is seduced. He's enticed to do something wrong. And that's what he does. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan understands, what God said. And I think that's exactly what God says. "Vatasiteni bo levolo chinam." So why did God destroy Job's life? Because Satan seduced him. Because he wanted to prove it to Satan. Because of his ego. Because of God's ego. Don't worry. It's not a true story. Don't worry. It's not a true story. That's why I wanted to open. Because now we... by knowing that this never really happened, God and Satan, it helps us really say the truth about the metaphor, about the story. And in this story that never happened, God has an ego. He needs to prove himself to Satan. And as a result, he sacrifices Job's life in order to protect, because of his pride, to protect his creation in front of Satan. That's not me saying, that's Rabbi Yochanan saying, interpreting, I think, the only way to interpret what God himself is saying. Vatasiteni bo levol'o chinam. In modern Hebrew, livloa means to swallow. You tempted me, you seduced me to swallow him for nothing. But in biblical Hebrew, it's to destroy. So something very interesting is happening here. And I think the best way to kind of see what's interesting here is to follow the word chinam. What's the word chinam? So we saw the word chinam twice, in chapter 1 and in chapter 2. In chapter 1, the word chinam appears the following way. As we saw, Satan says to God, "Hachinam yare Iyov Elohim." It's Satan's cynicism. He says to God, "You think that he worships you and he's so God-fearing and so ethical for no reason? Chinam?" He questions Job's goodness and he says, "It's not for no reason. It's not chinam." Well, now the word chinam appears again and it turns the whole story upside down. God says to Satan, "Vatasiteni bo levol'o chinam." You seduced me to destroy his life for nothing. In the first appearance of chinam, it was Satan questioning, rather, Job was good. I think the second appearance of the word chinam questions whether God is good. Because the first appearance of the word chinam says, Satan says, he's not good for no reason. And the second appearance, God says, maybe I was bad for no reason. Vatasiteni bo levol'o chinam. Which takes me to the conclusion of chapter 1 and 2, part 1. Part 1 starts with the question, is Job good? But then the word chinam turns the whole thing upside down, while the whole story turns upside down, and we have a new question, is God good? This is, I think, the power of the opening story of Job. It starts with a disagreement. We're not sure. We have no certainty. Is a human being good? And after we settle that question, we know that a human being is good, a new question is born, is God good? This question is going to become the question of the book of Job. So that's my reading of part one. There's three parts to Job, that's part one, that's the first two chapters. It starts with a question about Job and it ends with a serious question about God. This is how the whole, it's a story that starts with an anthropological question about the nature of human beings, and then it turns into a theological question, the nature of God. That's the power of the opening book story of Job. Towards the end, and now skipping to part 3, at the end of the book of Job, God answers Job. Now you're all invited to move to chapter 38 in the book of Job. It says, "Vaya'an Adonai et Iyov min ha-se'ara." God finally answers Job. And he says to him, "Mize machshich eitza b'milin blidat." He says, "I have an answer to you." By the way, the entire question, Job is going to ask this question in a very sophisticated way. And Eliphaz, and Bildad, and Zophar, and later on Elihu will try to answer him. And they all fail. They can't answer him. And then God appears. Oh, I don't want to say they fail. They actually say some interesting stuff. Some of them are very deep. We'll be studying some of their material. But now God appears. Vaya'an, ya'an, ma'ane, he answers. Vaya'an Adonai Iyob min ha-se'ara v'yomar. Mi ze machshich eitza b'milin blidat? God asks him a question. Who has all this wisdom while he knows absolutely nothing? You know the type of people that have strong opinions about issues they know nothing about? When there's asymmetry between your opinion and your knowledge about many, yes, in the age of Facebook, a lot of people have a strong opinions about issues they don't do. Now that asymmetry between opinions and knowledge, that's what God is blaming Job. He's saying to Job, Efaita beyos di aretz. He says that, sorry, Ezorna kagever chalatzecha ishalcha vehodieni. He's saying to him, literally, stand up. He says, be a man, stand up. I have a question to you, and please answer me. So this is interesting. The entire book, Job has a question. God finally appears. God finally delivers his answer. But what is his answer? A question. He says to him, I have a question to you. Ish'alcha v'hodieni. Some people think this is proof that God is a Jew, that he answers your question with a question of his own. And then he says to him, Eifo ha'ita b'yosdi aretz, haged im yadata bina. Where were you when I created the world? Please tell me if you have any wisdom. And then he goes on to creation. And he says to Job, can you understand the secrets of creation, the depth of creation? Were you there when I created the universe? Obviously you won't. So if you can't understand the secrets of the cosmos, how can you dare to ask questions about cosmic justice? It's a very powerful answer. It's not an answer that answers his question, it's an answer that undermines the legitimacy to ask the question. God's answer, there is a big perspective, a cosmic perspective, that only the one that created Earth and the world and the cosmos can understand. This is what Thomas Nagel calls a view from nowhere. We could see the objective truth only when we have the entire context. Job has a partial context. He doesn't have the whole picture. And that's why he doesn't have legitimacy to ask questions about divine justice. This answer of God is the I want to say something. The answer of God here in chapter 38, which we're tasting now, this is the classic answer religious rabbis, imams, ministers, qadis have answered throughout generations. This is the classic theological answer to the question of suffering. It's saying, you don't know why you suffer, but you only see a part of reality. When you see the big picture, from the perspective of the entire cosmos, your suffering has meaning. It's a mystery, but it has meaning. This is an answer I want to study in a deeper sense next week. But I want to ask now the question I was waiting for this entire session. How does Job respond to God's answer? Well, this is what Job says. Job says to God in chapter 40, Vayan Iyov et Adonai vayomer, hen kaloti ma'ashivecha. I am lightweight. I can't answer you. Yadai samti lemofi. Literally, I'm now covering my mouth with my hand. I'm not asking any more questions. Achadibalti v'lo enei shtayim v'lo osif. I realize I'm tiny, I'm small, you are great, there's a big picture, I see a part of the picture. I wasn't around when you created the cosmos. I don't have the legitimacy to ask about cosmic justice. Suffering has meaning, it's a mystery, I have to accept the mystery. Okay, so here's the question this entire session was building up towards. Job accepts God's answer. Can the readers of Job accept God's answer? Job says, yes, there's a whole cosmic perspective that I don't have. It's a mystery. But the readers of Job know why Job is suffering. It's not a mystery. It's not cosmic. It has nothing to do with creation. It's because God had a bet with Satan. It's comic. It's not cosmic, if that pun makes sense. That's all it is. God wanted to prove something to Satan, so that's why he's suffering. So you see, here we're in a situation where there's a gap between the readers of Job and Job. Job accepts God's answer. The readers of Job can't accept God's answer. This structure is irony. Irony has many meanings, but one of them is when you're watching a movie, and one of the characters is walking backwards, and he can't see, but you could see that there's a cliff, and you know something that he doesn't know. That's irony. You see a couple hugging, they're in love, and you know something that she doesn't know, that he's unfaithful. That's irony. That's the drama created in great literature. What's the irony the book of Job creates? The great irony of the book of Job. We know something Job doesn't know. We know why he's suffering. And when we know why he's suffering, God's speech doesn't make any sense. Actually, it seems like the context of the book of Job turns God's speech into a ridiculous speech. If you read the end of Job in light of the beginning of Job, and you know why he's suffering, and then God says, and he tells him that there is a big mystery here, that entire speech seems not only ridiculous, I think what the Bible is creating here, what the great inspired authors of the book of Job did, they created irony. And by creating irony, they're turning the answer, they're making a parody of the answer. So here's my conclusion of session number two. The book of Job doesn't only ask the question, why do bad things happen to good people? It's also a parody of the answer, the big question answer. That's, I think, my best way to read the book of Job. It's a parody of the classic answer, which obviously leaves a lot of questions. If the book of Job doesn't only ask the most powerful question, it also mocks and creates a parody of the most important answer. Where does that leave us? And what is this book doing in the Bible? It seems like the Bible offers a theory and then it introduces a book that criticizes its own theory. The Bible is also the theory, but also the critique of the theory is also Bible. Sometimes, from short distance, things seem random. But from long distance, it seems like there's order. Order is revealed. From a narrow perspective, some things seem random. They seem meaningless. But from a broad perspective, it becomes meaningful.